I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's April 26th, and we have a lot to talk about. On this podcast, we often talk about the physical impact of MS, and we also talk fairly often about the emotional impact of MS. Today, we're talking about the financial impact of MS. And while it seems like conversations about the financial impact of living with MS are typically focused on the cost of disease-modifying therapies, the cost of DMTs doesn't really tell the whole multi-billion dollar story of the cost of living with MS in the United States. The National MS Society commissioned a study to take all the relevant data into consideration and calculate the economic burden of MS in the U.S. And if you have the free Real Talk MS app installed on your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet, you'll find your copy of that study under the bonus content tab. Joining me today to discuss the recently published results of this study are the Executive Vice President of Research at the National MS Society, Dr. Bruce Bebo, and the National MS Society's Executive Vice President of Advocacy and Healthcare Access, Barry Talenti. But before we get to my conversation with Bruce and Barry, there are a few other things that you should know about. Results from any number of studies point to the fact that MS is more prevalent in higher latitudes. The further north you go, the more cases of MS are reported. Researchers have attributed this to the relative lack of sunlight in northern regions that leads to lower levels of vitamin D. And now, the results of a study from a research team in Australia may add another wrinkle to that phenomenon. The research team analyzed geographic and clinical data from just over 46,000 people who were part of the MS-BASE registry. The MS-BASE registry is a collection of data from more than 50,000 people living with MS in 33 different countries around the world. And this geographic and clinical analysis showed that not only the prevalence, but the severity of MS is also linked to geographic latitude. Among the 46,000 patient records analyzed, more severe disease was seen in people who lived above 40 degrees latitude. Just as a point of reference, cities in the United States that are located at 40 degrees latitude include Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Columbus, Ohio. One of the study's co-authors, Dr. Thomas Kalinczyk, noted that even after adjusting the analysis for differences in disease prevalence and access to therapy in different regions, the study showed that people living with MS in Scandinavia, for instance, were more likely to experience faster decline in neurological function than people who were living in the Mediterranean. The research team correlated their findings with the amount of exposure to ultraviolet B radiation from the sun that's available at different latitudes, concluding that ultraviolet B radiation exposure, or UVB, contributed to both MS susceptibility and severity. Well, there's lots more research to be done to further investigate this discovery, and we'll keep you posted as additional studies are announced. Now, if you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. I think one of the most vexing questions that every person living with MS considers from the moment that they're diagnosed is, why do some people develop severe MS while others don't? Well, there isn't much research devoted to advanced MS. There aren't any specific therapies, there are no best practices, and there aren't any comprehensive studies that look at the 5 to 10% of the people diagnosed with MS who experience a rapid decline in their ability to move, to function independently, and to even communicate. Their rapid disease progression ultimately requires significant nursing care, and can leave these individuals and their families both financially and emotionally devastated. So a University at Buffalo research team is launching a first-of-its-kind study that hopes to fill in some of the blanks when it comes to understanding why some people experience severe MS and others don't. The multi-year study, titled Comprehensive Assessment of Severely Affected MS, or CASA-MS, involves 60 patients being treated at the Jacobs MS Treatment Center at the University at Buffalo. These are people who are living independently with MS without the need for comprehensive caregiving services. Now, these 60 people will be matched by age, gender, and disease duration, with 60 people living with severe MS at the Boston Home, a pretty remarkable long-term care facility in Boston, Massachusetts, that specializes in caring for people with advanced stage MS. The research team hopes to learn what distinguishes the patients with severe MS from those patients who respond well to therapies and continue to live active, full lives decades after their diagnosis. The study will hopefully produce evidence to help clinicians identify predictors associated with severe MS. The study will also try to determine how protected rich environments, like the environment at the Boston Home, can contribute to patient health and overall well-being. What's really interesting here is this project was prompted by Buffalo Neuroimaging Analysis Center's Patient Advisory Council, which plays a key role in the selection of the center's research topics. So far, funding for the project has come from major gifts and grants by individuals whose families have been impacted by MS, and the Annette Funicello Research Fund for Neurological Diseases has set up a grant that will match dollar for dollar all funds raised through the end of 2022 up to $100,000. So the University at Buffalo is continuing to raise money for this project through crowdsourcing. And if you'd like to contribute to the project, you'll find a link to their crowdsourcing webpage in today's show notes. If you're a caregiver for someone living with MS, or if you're a healthcare provider who interacts with MS caregivers, or if you're a researcher who focuses their work on MS caregivers, or who might like to explore MS caregiver research, iConquer MS, the people-powered MS research network, wants to hear from you. iConquer MS is a virtual research community for people affected by MS. It has over 8,000 members, the majority of whom are people living with multiple sclerosis. And now iConquer MS has plans to expand its participant community to include MS caregivers themselves. The work of incorporating MS caregivers into iConquer MS is being guided by a steering committee that includes MS caregivers, people living with MS, healthcare providers, and researchers. Full disclosure, I'm serving as the co-lead in this project, and we want to make sure that we capture feedback from MS caregivers, researchers, and healthcare providers as we design and implement support for caregivers within iConquer MS. That's why your opinion is so important. Once your feedback is incorporated into this process, iConquer MS membership will engage MS caregivers. iConquer MS will also partner with researchers to support their work in MS caregiver research and will support healthcare providers and their needs for information and resources related to caregiver well-being. If you're an MS caregiver, researcher, or healthcare provider who interacts with MS caregivers, I hope you'll invest just 10 minutes of your time to complete an important online survey. You'll find the appropriate links to that survey for caregivers, healthcare providers, and researchers in today's show notes. And whether you're an MS caregiver or you're someone who's living with MS yourself, I don't have to tell you that living with MS is expensive. In a moment, I'll be joined by the National MS Society's Dr. Bruce Bebo and Barry Talenti to look at new research that tells us how expensive living with MS is, why it's so expensive, and what can be done about it. living with MS is expensive, and that probably doesn't come as much of a surprise to most of you. But if you're curious about how expensive living with MS is, why it's so expensive, and maybe what can be done about that, then you're going to be interested in the recently published results of a study that was commissioned by the National MS Society. And joining me today to talk about that study are Dr. Bruce Bebo and Barry Talenti. Dr. Bebo is the Executive Vice President of Research at the National MS Society, and Barry is the Executive Vice President of Advocacy and Healthcare Access at the MS Society. They've been guests on past episodes of the podcast, but I've only had the opportunity to talk with each of them individually, never together. So today, they have me outnumbered. Bruce, Barry, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having us, John.
The study we're talking about today was designed to calculate the economic burden of MS in the United States in 2019, including direct and indirect medical costs and lost productivity, and also predict the future economic burden of MS through the year 2039. Barry, maybe you can tell us, what was the impetus behind conducting this study?
Yeah, I'm happy to, John. I think we talk a lot, as you mentioned in your introduction, about MS being an expensive disease, but how expensive? What is that compared to other diseases? And what are those cost drivers? And all of that matters when you're advocating, when you're looking at healthcare resources, and when we're looking internally at the society of how do we designate our programming? What things do we want to make sure that we pay attention to? And what do we want to make sure that people with MS and healthcare professionals have to be able to address the needs of those living with MS?
Bruce, just so everyone's clear on what it is we are discussing, what does the term economic burden mean?
Sure. So first, it might be worth pointing out, John, that about the timing. So the reason why we thought this was a good time to provide an updated estimate of the economic burden of MS is because the prior estimates of the economic burden were decades old. They were published before a lot of the disease-modifying therapies that are commonly used to treat MS were, you know, available. And they preceded our updated prevalence of MS in the United States, as you remember, that we published a couple of years ago that showed there's almost 1 million people in the United States living with MS. So those, the evolution of disease-modifying therapies and the updated prevalence really were a catalyst to perform the study. And maybe I'll describe a little bit about how we did it, John, and then that'll kind of get you to your definition. So what the health economics folks would call this is a prevalence-based approach. And what that means really is that we, through different sources, and I'll tell you about what the sources were in a minute, but using different sources, we measured what the per capita, right, the per person expense for MS was. And another way of thinking about this is they call this an incremental expense. Another way of thinking about that is it's the excess expense for MS. So that the per capita expense for MS was calculated from a cohort of people living with MS, and it was compared to the per capita medical expenses of an otherwise healthy control group. And so the numbers that you're going to hear in a minute are the additional or excess or incremental expense of MS compared to the general population. And in how we calculated this per capita expense was complex, but essentially involves using administrative data, John, or this would be both public and private insurance data to calculate a lot of the medical expense. And then the non-medical expenses and some of the indirect expenses that you mentioned, those were calculated using a survey that we developed and fielded and was responded by almost 1,000 people with MS. That helped us understand that, again, per person excess expense for some of those things that aren't in an insurance database, like lost productivity or expenses that aren't covered by insurance.
Barry, what did the research team learn? What are the numbers taking into account that nearly 1 million people live with MS in the United States? What does the total economic burden of MS look like?
Yeah, so these are some big numbers, and I don't think it will be super surprising to people when you sit down and think about it, but when you hear these numbers, they are staggering. So the total economic burden annually is more than $85 billion. So that's billion with a B. Yep. So John's eyebrows are going up. So I told you it's staggering, right? And the largest percentage of that is attributed to direct medical costs, which again, I think makes sense when you think about it. So it's those things like the disease modifying treatments, other medications that people take, doctor's visits, hospital visits, medical equipment, you know, physical therapy, other therapies, all of those will fall under that direct medical cost bucket, which is $63 billion. And then there's the indirect costs, and that largely includes things like missed work or early retirement. That's at $21 billion. And then non-medical costs, which includes caregiving, home and vehicle modifications, some of those are some examples, is a little over $1 billion. So when you sort of aggregate for all people with MS, we're getting high up into the billion dollars.
Yeah, maybe I could add just a tad bit of color to that, John, because I know you have a passion for the caregiving topic. And those numbers, the indirect expense also included indirect expenses, lost productivity, early retirement, absenteeism, so forth from work for caregivers, which if I'm remembering correctly, Barry, was somewhere in the range of around 20% of that expense was attributed to lost productivity, indirect expenses associated with unpaid caregivers.
That's right.
I appreciate you adding that, Bruce. First, it was good information to have. And second, it gave me a second to catch my breath after Barry shared some of those astronomical numbers. I think I just jotted down, you said $63 billion was direct medical expense. Do you know how much of that was prescription medication?
Yeah, we can certainly talk about that. I think we also want to make sure to highlight, you know, so we talked about that's the aggregate, the global for the United States. So on an individual basis, those direct medical costs attributed to a single person living with MS are more than $65,000. So it's important to remember that's not necessarily what an individual with MS is paying themselves. But it does include those medical costs that the individual is paying for, that they're insured, the healthcare system overall. So $65,000 a year living with MS. And as Bruce mentioned, that's the excess cost. So that's, you know, in addition to sort of a controlled person, so an average person or a person not living with MS, sort of comparing their medical costs with the person with MS.
Right. And matched, John, of course, too, based on gender and other demographic factors so that it's controlled properly. And perhaps to answer that first question, John, for the most of the pharmaceutical costs are wrapped up in that direct medical expense. And it's about 60% of that direct medical expense is the cost of disease modifying therapies. And it's that proportion is consistent with previous studies that have looked at the direct medical expense and the proportionality of that to disease modifying therapies.
It's taken me a minute to really take some of those numbers in, especially when you break them down to what it means for an individual. And, you know, I recognize someone listening to this is going to say, I'm not paying all of that money myself. But the fact is, it is being paid somewhere along the way. This is the real cost of what it means to America to have a million people living with MS. It means we're spending north of $85 billion on managing this. But it's not just the cost of prescription medications that are so high. Those productivity costs, the lost work due to absenteeism, presenteeism, those equate to tens of billions of dollars in and of themselves. Bruce, can you explain what absenteeism, I think that's a common enough phrase, but what presenteeism is and talk about that particular line in this study?
Sure. Yeah, So just to sort of recap, the indirect or non-medical expenses for our cost burden of MS is about, well, it's $22 billion, which is about 25% of the total economic burden. So just this is the part of the pie that we're talking about, right? As Barry mentioned, this absenteeism and presenteeism and early retirement are big drivers of that. Absenteeism may be a self-explanatory, but that's essentially people calling in sick for work and not able to work that day because of issue related to their health, or perhaps for a doctor's appointment or an infusion for their medication or whatever it might be. That would be absenteeism. Presenteeism really is lost productivity. You're at work, but you are not working at your best. You are not feeling well. You're not feeling well because your MS flared or because you're having a side effect from a medication or whatever it might be. You're not at your best. You're not working at your best. And that can be translated to a financial figure. And that's the definition of presenteeism.
Yeah. It's important to note too, John, that the presenteeism and absenteeism costs for caregivers are about half of what they are for people with MS. So that's still very substantial and something to really think about and consider.
Something I have considered long and hard, trust me, but yes. I appreciate that insight. Are there any other numbers or aspects or details behind these numbers that particularly stand out to either of you?
Oh, it's a great question, John. And I think, you know, even though Bruce and I have been living with this data for a little over a year now, I think we're still digesting it too. So, you know, there's the top line numbers we talked about. We're still trying to dig in a little bit and understand. I think, you know, the disease modifying treatment costs are certainly substantial, which we knew that they would be. I think the caregiving costs are really, like I said, something to consider and really think about where to go with that. How does that impact our advocacy work, the resources that we provide to caregivers? What opportunities does this open up for conversations with employers about how to best support people with MS and their care partners? What could that look like? So, you know, we're taking the information in and we're thinking about different avenues to help get to solutions based on what the data tells us.
While it's a smaller piece of the pie, those non-medical costs, part of what Barry was referring to in her comments, you know, it's a smaller piece of the pie as far as the economic burden to the country, but it's likely a much larger piece of the pie for individual person. So some of the costs that were wrapped up in that non-medical number include non-medical daily care. So daycare, perhaps for someone who may need it. That's one of the big pieces of that expense. Certainly purchasing of equipment for your home or for a vehicle to accommodate different abilities is another piece, big piece of that pie. Although a little smaller piece of the overall, I keep using the word pie, but I think people get that analogy. Although when looking at the total impact, economic impact to MS as a smaller component, that's probably one that's more impactful for individuals living with MS. These are largely unreimbursed expenses that people have. So worth noting that as well. And also capturing some of these other expenses that maybe we don't think about so often. So things like experimental therapies, non-traditional alternative treatments, other things that aren't covered by insurance. That was another, I'd say, again, another piece of the expense, a smaller one, but one that maybe has more impact on individuals than on the system.
I'm glad you pointed that out. As I think you both know, I have hands-on experience in that realm, and it's not a happy story. My wife lived with progressive MS. We had excellent health insurance. And in spite of it, just based upon all the things that insurance either doesn't cover or doesn't cover completely, it became an unmanageable financial drain in our household. And I know that's not a unique story. So you're absolutely right. While maybe the insurance companies take if you're lucky, take some of the sting out of your personal responsibility for paying for that disease-modifying therapy. On the other hand, those other non-medical expenses do come home to roost at home. Barry, what do these study results mean? And I think you started to answer this question, but what do they mean in terms of the society's advocacy work?
Right. So we certainly started to include these numbers already as we talked to elected officials and their staff. So, you know, what we strive to do with our advocacy work is to paint the lived experience and the real picture of what it means to live with MS. And we do that both through sharing stories of people who are going through these experiences, as well as data that backs it up and supports it and puts things in context, maybe compared to other diseases or compared to the healthcare system overall. So this data is incredibly helpful to be able to do that. John, you and I have talked a number of times around our priority to really address access to medications and lower drug prices and get people better access. And this data really supports that work as well. You know, it like Bruce said, it's 60 to 70% of medical care for people with MS is attributed to the disease modifying treatments, depending on sort of where you're gathering that information from. But our study is right in the mix with other data sources around the percent that it is. So it certainly reinforces that that's one of our top priorities as we look to find solutions for people with MS. We're also looking at, what does this mean for healthcare professionals as they really understand this data as well? And we've done one training and we have another one planned for healthcare professionals to really think about this data, what it might mean as they're seeing patients in their office, and just sort of prompt questions or conversations that maybe they can have with people with MS and their family members as they're seeing them to really tease some of this out to see if there's interventions that could happen. Everything from, you know, really digging into, well, how much is the out-of-pocket cost going to be around a disease-modifying treatment or other medication, and what does that mean for that family, to that work conversation related to absenteeism and presenteeism. How are things going at work? Are you missing work? Are you finding that you're able to focus? What does that look like? Because again, those interventions might be able to happen to really have an impact.
I think that when we as activists speak to our lawmakers, there's nothing better than having real data at your fingertips to share with them. And this gives us that. I think it really underscores how research that the society worked on can really propel the urgency and raise the importance of the advocacy work that we all try to do in our own way. So this is a great tool for everybody, I think. Dr. Bruce Bebo and Barry Talenti, I want to thank you for your combined efforts. And I know you didn't do it alone, so along with the rest of your teams, to shine this really bright light on what I'm going to call the outrageously high cost of living with MS, and for working diligently on the healthcare access side, as you just explained, Barry, to make sure that our healthcare providers have an awareness of the personal costs that their patients are facing every single day, and on the advocacy side, to make sure that our lawmakers better understand this and address it through new policy initiatives. Thanks for all of that. And of course, thanks for talking with me today.
Sure, John. It's always good to be with you.
Thanks, John.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/243. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. If you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.